Okay, we're just about ready to start. So if the last people coming in could find a seat, please. Okay, our speaker is making his way to the stage. Our speaker is Reverend Dr. Stephen Sizer. He's a vicar from Virginia Water in Surrey. Stephen is very involved in what's happening in Israel-Palestine. He's been going there for many, many years, and so keeps his pulse on what is happening on the ground. Because of his involvement, he's also working on executive committees with other support organizations that are involved in that part of the world as well. Stephen has written two books. The titles are here at the front. And they're going to be on sale at the bookstore. More on that later. Stephen has become the leading authority in the UK on the subject of Christian Zionism. That's why it's a great privilege to have him back here with us this afternoon as he speaks to us now, followed by a time of questions on Zion's Christian soldiers marching as to war. Let's welcome Stephen Sizer.
It's lovely to see you this afternoon. Thank you for coming. Thank you for choosing this venue. And I hope and pray that you feel the same way in an hour's time. Zion's Christian soldiers marching as to war with the Star of David going on before. Let me ask you one or two questions to warm you up. Why is there such a close relationship between the Christian right, the political establishment, and the State of Israel? Why, after 40 years, does Israel continue to occupy parts of Lebanon, the Sheba Farm, Syria, the Golan Heights, and Palestine, the West Bank, while Syria has been pressured to withdraw from Lebanon? Why is Israel able to develop and hold chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons, disregarding every international agreement and treaty, while Iran is threatened with a preemptive strike for seeking to obtain nuclear technology? Why has Israel been the subject of more UN resolutions than any other country in the world, and why has America vetoed virtually every single one of them? Why will you not find a single serving US politician critical of Israel? Not one. Why has Britain and America become the focus of so much hatred in the Arab world and the target of Islamic terrorists, despite our commitment to international law, democracy, and human rights? Well, the answers to these questions will remain unanswered if we fail to factor in what I believe is the most influential, powerful, and destructive movement within the Christian church today, Christian Zionism. Let me define it, first of all. Christian Zionism is essentially a political and theological movement within largely Protestant evangelical Christianity that views the modern state of Israel as mandated by God, the fulfillment of biblical prophecy, and therefore we should support it morally, economically, politically, unconditionally. Christian Zionists are convinced that God blesses nations and individuals that stand with Israel and curses those that don't. Christian Zionism provides a biblical justification for greater U.S. intervention militarily in the Middle East. It's deeply mistrustful of the UN, the European community. It demonizes Islam. It opposes the implementation of international law and the peace process in the Middle East. Now, we need to distinguish three things: Judaism, Israel, and Zionism. Judaism is a religion. Israel is a nation. Zionism is a political system. As a religion, I respect Judaism. As a nation, I recognize Israel. but as a political system, I repudiate Zionism, repudiating both anti-Semitism and Zionism, which I believe is inherently racist. Let me give you a flavor of the movement. A speech by John Hagee. Hagee is the founder and senior pastor of Cornerstone Church, San Antonio, Texas, 18,000 members, nearly as many people who are here at Greenbelt attend his church on a weekly basis, so it's a pretty influential church in Texas. His sermons and his lectures go out on 160 TV stations, 50 radio stations, and with an estimated audience of 99 million homes worldwide on a weekly basis. So he's an influential guy. Last year, he admitted, for 25 years, I have been pounding the evangelical community over television. The Bible is a very pro-Israeli book. If a Christian admits I believe the Bible, I can make him a pro-Israel supporter, or they have to denounce their faith. So I have the Christians over the barrel, you might say. The assumption Hagee makes that Bible-believing Christians will be pro-Israel is the dominant view in America today. In March 2007, Hagee was a guest speaker at the APAC conference, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. He began with these words. The sleeping giant of Christian Zionism has awakened. There are 50 million Christians standing up and applauding the State of Israel. The Jerusalem Post pointed out his speech did not lack clarity. He went on to say, it is 1938, Iran is Germany, Ahmadinejad is the new Hitler, we must stop Iran's nuclear threat and stand boldly with Israel, the only democracy in the Middle East. Think of our future together, 50 million evangelicals joining in common cause with 5 million Jewish people in America. It's a match made in heaven. Now, we don't have time to explore the roots of the movement historically. If you want that, there's a fantastic book in the bookstore called Challenging Christian Zionism. It's about 30 or 40 different authors in the book. It's a Seville book. And there's also my book, Christian Zionism. It traces the roots of the movement. Let me just give you a flavor of where it's come from. The roots lie in the 19th century as a movement. The beginning of the 19th century, the world was plunged into revolutions right across Europe. We had the Civil War in America, and the optimism of the missionary movements of the 18th century gave way to a pessimistic and increasingly apocalyptic view of the future. It gave rise to the millennial cults, the Mormons, the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Millerites, the Adventists, and it was in that milieu that Christian Zionism was born as a movement. With the founding of Israel in 1948, the capture of Jerusalem in 67 gave a significant boost to the movement, and successive US presidents from Jimmy Carter on have been pro-Zionist. Reagan, for example, admitted, in fact, in 1980, in his speeches in those elections which he won from Carter, he used the word Armageddon 20 times in his election speeches. George W. Bush has followed in that pedigree. He advocates America's God-given manifest destiny. At the 2003 Israeli-Palestinian summit in Sharm el-Sheikh, he confessed, I am driven with a mission from God. God would tell me, George, go and fight those terrorists in Afghanistan, and I did. And then God would tell me, George, go and end the tyranny in Iraq, and I did. And now again, I feel God's word coming to me, go get the Palestinians their state and get the Israelis their security and peace in the Middle East, and by God, I'm going to do it. The problem is his methods. Last month in the Times newspaper, George Bush it revealed that he has given Israel the amber light to attack Iran. Pentagon officials were quoted as saying, quote, the president is really preoccupied with the nuclear threat against Israel, and I know he doesn't believe that anything but force will deter Iran, unquote. Now, both contenders who want to succeed Bush, McCain and Obama, are outdoing one another to show their loyalty to Zionists. This is largely due to the influence of the Christian Zionist lobby. While critics claim 25 to 30 million subscribers, John Hagee, Pat Robertson, have weekly access to at least 100 million Christians. The Pew Research Center showed recently that 60% of U.S. evangelicals support the State of Israel, and half of them argued and believed that the primary reason for that support was their theological convictions. Unity Coalition for Israel, founded in 1991, is the largest of these organizations. It is an umbrella movement for 200 different organizations, 40 million active members, 1,700 radio stations, 245 Christian TV stations, 120 Christian newspapers. The three largest Christian Zionist organizations, the International Christian Embassy, Jerusalem, Christian Friends of Israel, and Bridges for Peace. A powerful movement, you bet. Christian Zionism is undoubtedly a dominant force shaping US policy in the Middle East. Now, in my second presentation tomorrow at 10 a.m. in the Shine Tent, I'm going to show you how the Bible repudiates Christian Zionism, and you won't want to miss it. We're going to look at what the Bible says about the future and about Armageddon, and we're going to ask the question, do you want to be left behind? Now, I don't want you to lose any sleep tonight because I don't believe Jesus is coming back before tomorrow. Why? Because it's already tomorrow in Australia. So tomorrow we're going to look at the good news. Today I've got to tell you the bad news, and it's worse than you can ever imagine. I want to highlight six ways in which Christian Zionists are applying their faith politically. One, defending Israel. Two, assisting Jewish emigration. Three, supporting the illegal settlements. Four, lobbying for an exclusive Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And five, funding the rebuilding of the Jewish temple. Six, opposing the peace process. I'm going to show you these six strategies are exacerbating tensions in the Middle East, and they are hastening Armageddon. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. One, supporting Israeli colonialism. The conviction that the Jewish people remain God's chosen people, something, by the way, that's not stated at all in the New Testament. The church is described as God's chosen people. In some ways, separate from the church, is deeply rooted in Christian Zionism. Till the 1980s, if you're old enough to remember, US foreign policy was largely focused on countering the Soviet hegemony. The protection of Western Europe with NATO was a higher priority than Israel. But with the collapse of communism and a power vacuum created in the Middle East, US influences have filled that vacuum. Following the Gulf War to liberate Kuwait, Afghanistan from the Taliban, Iraq from Saddam Hussein, the US has significantly increased its influence in the Middle East, and the rise of the pro-Israeli lobby has gone alongside that. As a consequence, Israel in particular has become central to US foreign policy, not least since 9/11. And that change in foreign policy has been strongly influenced by the Christian right. It's why you won't find a single serving US politician critical of Israel. It's political suicide to criticize Israel on anything. Let me give you one insight into this. Zeev Chafetz, writing in the New York Times last year, said, in the last 8 years alone, an estimated 400,000 born-again Christians have sent Rabbi Ikel Eckstein about $250 million for Jewish causes of his personal choosing. He went on to say, no Jew since Jesus has commanded this kind of Gentile following. One, supporting Israel, defending Israel. Two, restoration. How is that facilitated? Well, it is facilitated by assisting the return of the Jewish people to Palestine. With the fall of communism in the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, since 1980, a coalition of Christian organizations have been actively working in Russia and Eastern Europe, assisting and encouraging Jews to make aliyah, to leave and move to Palestine. Exabus was the first organization, 1991. It was first called the Good News Bus Travels Company. Hard to sell in Hull, where it came from. So they changed their name to Exabus. It sounds much more sexy, if you like, Exabus. It's facilitated 56,000 Jewish people to emigrate to Israel in close cooperation with the Jewish Agency. Since 1991, the International Christian Embassy has paid for 40,000 Russian emigres to move to Israel. The problem is they are being located in the occupied territories. They are displacing Palestinians. They will identify Jewish communities in Russia. They will show them films of idyllic life in Israel. They will pay off their debts, pay for their exit permits. for documentation to prove their Jewish origins. They'll provide passports, debt repayment, transport, accommodation. They will assist them to resettle in Israel and the West Bank. They will provide food, clothing, kitchen, school supplies, as well as medical equipment. The facilitation of Jews leaving Russia and Eastern Europe and moving to Israel is being facilitated by Christian, misguided Christian organizations. First, defending Israel. Second, assisting emigration. Third, sustaining the West Bank settlements. For many Zionists, based on the promise God made to Abraham that the borders of his land would be from the river of Egypt to the Euphrates, Christian Zionist organizations believe that Israel must expand its borders, not retract them. And therefore, they defend the settlement program and they justify the apartheid separation wall. The conviction that the entire West Bank is integral to Israel has led many Christian Zionists to adopt settlements. Now, you may think this is a crazy idea, but if you're the pastor of a church with 18,000 members, the idea of adopting a settlement of 500 members sounds pretty easy, doesn't it? You can sponsor a settlement quite easily with a church that size. 39 of the settlements have been adopted by over 50 churches in South Africa, in Holland, Germany, Philippines, and the USA. They show solidarity by funding the settlements, visiting them, praying for them, defending them, justifying them. So, for example, under Carter, the settlements were illegal. Under Reagan, they became an obstacle to peace. Under George W. Bush, they are now Israeli neighborhoods to be retained in any final status agreement. Fourth, Jerusalem, lobbying for international recognition. At the core of the Christian Zionist support for Israel's claim to the occupied territories lies the conviction that Jerusalem must remain exclusively and undivided the Israeli capital. If you know your geography, you will know that there are no embassies in Jerusalem. The international community does not recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, notwithstanding Marks and Spencer's Atlas, which shows Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. So the Christian Zionist lobby is seeking to change world opinion and facilitate Jerusalem becoming the capital of Israel. How are they going to do that? Very easy. You need $100 million and one bill through the U.S. Congress to move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. That's all it will take. In 1995, Senator Bob Dole, who led the crusade to achieve this, said, "Israel's capital is not on the table of the peace process. Moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem does nothing to prejudice the outcome of any future negotiation." That's pretty Orwellian in its logic. It's entirely opposite. It prejudices everything because it destroys an independent, viable, contiguous Palestinian state. If you take Jerusalem out of the ingredients, there is no Palestine. Senator Bob Dole went on to say, "Jerusalem is today, as it has always been for 3,000 years, the heart and soul of the Jewish people. It is also and should remain forever the eternal undivided capital of the State of Israel. The time has come to enact legislation to get the job done." Three occasions, Congress has passed legislation to do that. Three times, successive U.S. presidents have refused to sign off on the legislation. But it's a question of when it will happen, not whether. Give you an insight. The International Christian Embassy sponsoring adverts in the New York Times called Christians to support a united Jerusalem. United meaning exclusively Israeli, not united in the way we would understand. We, the undersigned Christian spiritual leaders communicating weekly to more than 100 million Christian Americans, are proud to join together in supporting the continued sovereignty of the State of Israel over the holy city of Jerusalem. We believe Jerusalem or any portion of it should not be negotiable in the peace process. Jerusalem must remain undivided as the eternal capital of the Jewish people. You hear this mantra all the time, but notice how they end their advert. Join us in our holy mission to ensure Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel. Moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem is a holy mission because they believe it's fulfilling God's agenda. However, even more critical to the Zionist reading of prophecy, many Christian Zionists believe the Jewish temple must be rebuilt on the Haram al-Sharif in place of the Dome of the Rock. And you will find many Christian Zionists supporting and facilitating this to take place. And their hero within the Jewish community is a guy called Gershon Salomon. He's the founder of the Temple Mount Faithful. You might like to get onto his email list and find out what they're up to. The Temple Mount Faithful is committed to destroying the Dome of the Rock and rebuilding the Jewish temple, and the Israeli High Court has given them permission to lay the foundation stones. Twice a year they try and take an articulated lorry through the Dung Gate into the plaza below the Temple Mount area to lay the cornerstones. This is what he said at the International Christian Embassy gathering recently. The mission of the present generation is to liberate the Temple Mount and remove the defiling abomination there. The Jewish people will not be stopped at the gates leading to the Temple Mount. We will fly our Israeli flag over the Temple Mount, which will be minus its Dome of the Rock. It will only have our Israeli flag and our temple. This is what our generation must accomplish. And in the Times newspaper, he was interviewed, and he insisted the Islamic shrine would be destroyed. He said this, quote, in the Times newspaper, hardly a left-wing radical newspaper, "The Israeli government must do it. We must have a war. There will be many nations against it, but God will be our general. I am sure this is a test. God is expecting us to move the dome with no fear of other nations. The Messiah will not come by himself. We should bring him by fighting." Now that sounds remarkably like the zealots of the first century. Gershon Salomon is a regular speaker at Christian conferences and churches, especially in the States. And since 1967, there have been over 100 armed attempts to destroy the Dome of the Rock. And not on a single occasion has a Israeli prime minister or chief rabbi condemned or criticized any of those assaults. Which leads us to our sixth plank, the future, opposing the peace process, hastening Armageddon. The hostility that many Christian Zionists show toward any compromise over sharing the land or Jerusalem or the holy sites makes for an ominous future, not least because of the inherent pessimism of their eschatology. And we're going to look at that tomorrow in more detail. The first part of the plank of their view of the future is this idea of an alliance. It's a polarized worldview. Jerry Falwell best expressed this. He said, "God has been kind to America because America has been kind to the Jewish people." Mike Evans, a contemporary advocate, founder and director of the Jerusalem Prayer Team, which brings together 200 or 300 Christian leaders supporting the Zionist adventure. He said this in 1980, as long ago as 1980, he wrote a book called Israel, if you can get your head around this, Israel, America's Key to Survival. He claimed this: "Only one nation, Israel, stands between terrorist aggression and the complete decline of the United States as democratic world power. God is going to bless America and Israel as well. If Israel falls, the United States can no longer remain a democracy. Arab money is being used to control and influence major U.S. corporations, making it economically more and more difficult for the U.S. to stand against world terrorism." That's what he said in 1980. But he made an even bigger splash in 2004. He wrote a new book called The American Prophecies. And it reached the New York Times bestseller list 3 weeks before it was published. How do you get a book on the New York Times bestseller list 3 weeks before your book's been published? Easy. You tell all your fans to pre-order 3 copies, pay for them, and then when they arrive, return them to the author and he will give them away. Pretty slick, isn't it? And this is what the book says. "Is America in prophecy? Yes, it is," he said. "After thousands of hours of research, I'm totally convinced America is found in prophecy, and I believe you will too after reading my book." His book is one of the very, very few 5-star rated Christian books on Amazon. Amazon's editorial review observes that actual quotes from scripture are rather sparse. You know, they've got the dilemma. How do you sell a book, but how do you not sell a book too strongly? But controversially, this is what he says in the book: "September the 11th would never have happened if America had fought the same bigotry in the 1990s rather than trying to appease it. Millions of Jews would be living today if anti-Semitism had not been ignored in the 1920s and 30s. And I agree with him. But then he goes on to say the Great Depression, as well as other American tragedies, happened because of America's pride and challenge to God's almighty plan for Israel. Christian Zionists like John Hagee and Mike Evans see America as the great redeemer, her superpower role in the world predicted in Scripture, providentially ordained, and leading us into a global catastrophe. One author said, it is a dualistic, Manichaean view of global politics, America and Israel together against an evil world. And the tragedy of Christian Zionist theology is their demonization of the Arabs and Islam. Because on the one hand, there is this elevation of the Jewish people, and then there is a denigration of the Arab peoples. Christian Zionists, while lovers of Israel, are rarely burdened for or concerned for the Arab condition. Indeed, their antipathy is often in inverse proportion to their empathy for Israel. Anti-Arab prejudices and Orientalist stereotypes are common. Let me just give you a couple. Ramon Bennett is an author of a book called The Philistines, comparing the Philistines with the Palestinians. He described the modern Arab nations as barbarous. The customs of hospitality and generosity have changed little in 4,000 years, he claims, nor have the customs of raiding, thieving, rustling, saving face, or savagery. He goes on to say in this book, Philistine, the Arab is neither a vicious nor usually a calculating liar, but a natural one. Now, if you said that of the Irish, or the Scots, or the Jewish people, the book would be banned as anti-Semitic. But it's open season on the Arabs. Franklin Graham, son of Billy Graham, president of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, made similar remarks in the Charlotte Observer in 2000, and he's refused to repudiate what he wrote. He said this, "The Arabs will not be happy until every Jew is dead. They hate the state of Israel. They all hate the Jews. God gave the land to the Jews. The Arabs will never accept that." Unquote. Now, again, you just turn that round, and you know how ludicrous and absurd and stupid it is to say that. Just say, imagine, the Jews will not be happy until every Arab is dead. They all hate the Arabs. God gave the land to the Arabs. The Jews will never accept that. You know it's stupid and absurd. But somehow it has a ring of truth when he turns it around. So while anti-Semitism is taboo, it's open season on the Arabs. But it gets worse. Because you find leading Christian political leaders in America now justifying the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. Dick Armey, the former Republican Senate leader, made groundbreaking news when he justified the removal, the forced removal of Palestinians from the occupied territories. In an interview, May the 1st, 2002, on CNBC, he was interviewed by Chris Matthews. He said this, quote, "Most of the people who now populate Israel were transported from all over the world to that land. They made it their home. The Palestinians can do the same, and we are perfectly content to work with the Palestinians in doing that. We are not willing to sacrifice Israel for the notion of a Palestinian homeland. I'm content to have Israel grab the entire West Bank. There are many Arab nations that have made hundreds of thousands of acres of land, soil, and property, and an opportunity to create a Palestinian state. Build a Palestine elsewhere." Now, Chris Matthews, gave Dick Armey several opportunities to clarify what he was saying. Was he or was he not advocating ethnic cleansing of all Palestinians? Dick Armey was unrepentant. When he was asked, "Have you ever told George Bush, the president from your home state of Texas, that you think the Palestinians should get up and go and leave Palestine and that's the solution?" This is what he said, quote, "I'm probably telling him right now. I'm content to have Israel occupy that land that it now occupies, and to have those people who've been aggressors against Israel retired to some other arena." That's the most senior Republican politician in 2002 telling his president how to solve the conflict in the Middle East. Dick Armey's views that the Palestinians should be retired is only the latest in a series of calls in the mainstream media for the removal of Palestinians. I'll give you just one example of that. The root of the separation wall, the apartheid wall, goes deep, deep into the occupied territories, and it places 200,000 West Bank Palestinians on the wrong side of the wall. So whenever anyone tells you it was built for security, you know they're lying through their teeth, because there are 200,000 potential terrorists on the wrong side of the wall. What's going to happen to them? They're going to be kicked out. They're going to lose the land they're living on. The wall is entirely to justify the occupation and stealing of that land. And if you want to get an idea of the height of that separation wall, if you look up at the grandstand, you'll see a World Vision banner, a vertical banner. It shows you the height of the wall. It's twice the height of the Berlin Wall, and it is built intentionally to steal land from the Palestinians. Our Christian Zionist friends oppose the peace process. So this is the saddest thing I'm going to share with you this afternoon. While Christian Zionists invariably recognize Israel's unilateral claim to the occupied territories, they also oppose Palestinian aspirations to self-determination, since the two are incompatible. You cannot share the West Bank. Under international law, Israel should withdraw, remove its settlements, and allow an independent Palestinian state. But many Christian Zionists see the peace accords as a betrayal of God's will for the Jewish people. Hal Lindsey, probably the most influential Christian Zionist writer, over 30 books, although he regurgitates his books every 5 or 6 years and just changes the ending to fit with the latest newspaper endings. But in 2003, he said this. He said, "I am heartbroken over the latest stage of the roadmap to peace, this odyssey to Holocaust. I was sickened to watch a well-meaning Christian American president talk incessantly about his vision." Now, what would make you sick about something that George Bush was going on about? What vision could George W. Bush have that would make a Christian leader sick? This is what it was: a Palestinian and Jewish state living side by side in peace. Peace talks are therefore not only a waste of time, they're seen as at best a lack of faith and at worst a rebellious defiance against God's plans. Pat Robertson got into trouble when he suggested that 9/11 was a result of God's judgment on America for compromising over a sharing of Jerusalem. He said this in 2002 on the CBN 700 Club. If America wants to interfere with Bible prophecy and wants to move and wrest East Jerusalem away from the Jews and give it to Yasser Arafat, heaven help this nation. If the United States takes East Jerusalem back and makes it the capital of the Palestinian state, we are asking for the wrath of God. And in 2006, at the inaugural event for Christians United for Israel, after recorded greetings from George W. Bush in the presence of 4 U.S. senators, as well as the Israeli ambassador to the United States, John Hagee said this. He said, quote, "The United States must join Israel in a preemptive military strike against Iran to fulfill God's plan for both Israel and the West, a biblically prophesied end-time confrontation with Iran, which will lead to the rapture, tribulation, and second coming of Christ." So it's all right then. The danger of this theology is not that it is so fatalistic, but that, like the Chicken Little story, it seems so contagious. Clearly, Christian Zionism as a movement has profound and lasting political consequences. Christian Zionists, and there are some here I've met already, show varying degrees of enthusiasm for implementing those 6 convictions. First, the belief the Jews remain God's chosen people leads Christian Zionists to justify Israel's military occupation of Palestine. 2, as God's chosen people, the final restoration of the Jews to Israel is therefore encouraged and facilitated by bringing the Jews back to the land. 3, the land as delineated scripture belongs exclusively to Jewish people, and therefore they justify the settlements and the occupation of the West Bank. 4, Jerusalem is the eternal exclusive capital of the Jews, and therefore it cannot be shared with the Palestinians, and they want to move the embassies back to Jerusalem. 5, the 3rd Jewish temple must be built, the priesthoods consecrated and sacrifices reinstituted, and therefore some Christian Zionists support Jewish terrorist organizations committed to achieving that by force. And lastly, since Christian Zionists are convinced there will be an apocalyptic war in the near future, there is no prospect for peace between Jews and Arabs. Indeed, to advocate Israel compromises with Islam or coexist with Palestinians is to identify with those destined for judgment and they're opposing God and Israel in the final battle of Armageddon. The consequences, therefore, for this uncritical support for the state of Israel is inherently and pathologically destructive, both for the future of Israel and the security of the West. Tomorrow, we're going to deconstruct that apocalyptic view from the Bible, but I want to close with a taster. Remember, it's 10 o'clock, rise and shine tomorrow morning. Shine, not rise, shine. Okay? But let me give you just a couple of passages to hopefully help you to see a corrective to the theology that I've introduced you to today. In the New Testament, the followers of Jesus Christ are called to be peacemakers, not widow makers. The path of non-violence is the path Jesus has called us to. It is peacemaking that Jesus insists identifies the authenticity of those who claim to be his followers. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Matthew 5, verse 9. The Apostle Paul elaborates on this radical, countercultural role in 2 Corinthians 5. He says this, "From now on we should regard no one from a worldly point of view. Though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has gone, the new has come. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us a ministry of reconciliation. He has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. Therefore, we are called to repudiate worldly criteria that distinguishes and categorizes and treats people on the basis of their race, their color, their creed, or their wealth. We should work for peace with justice for both Jews and Palestinians. Like the story of Isaac's children, Jacob and Esau, it is time to stop fighting over the birthright and start sharing the blessings of the land God has given to his people. I want to commend these two books to you. Let me explain. This one, Christian Zionism, Roadmap to Armageddon, deals with the historical roots of the movement. It traces the theology of the movement and the political agenda. And today was a taster for that. If you want something that's lighter, easier to read, punchier, shorter, and just deals with the Bible, Zion's Christian Soldiers deals simply with what is the relationship between Israel and the church and the Bible. And it goes through the subjects we've looked at this afternoon from a biblical point of view. And the best bit about the book is an unpublished sermon at the back by John Stott on the place of Israel. So I commend the book just for that sermon alone. And if you want me to graffiti your books, if you want to buy them, tomorrow, 12 o'clock in the bookstore. We're going to prepare for our communion service in a moment, but I want to close with a prayer and then we'll open up for questions. Garth Hewitt, who I'm a raving fan of, has written many songs about the plight of the Christian community in Israel and Palestine. And one of them is based on some verses from the Jewish Talmud. It's called 10 Measures of Beauty God Gave to the World, 9 to Jerusalem, 1 to the remainder. 10 Measures of Sorrow God Gave to the World, 9 to Jerusalem, 1 to the remainder. So pray for the peace. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. I'd like to close using his chorus from that song as a prayer. May the justice of God fall down like fire and bring a home for the Palestinian. May the mercy of God pour down like rain and protect the Jewish people. And may the beautiful eyes of a holy God who weeps for all his children bring the healing hope for his wounded ones, for the Jew and the Palestinian. Amen. Thank you. And now you've got half as long as I took for questions. The microphone is over there, so smile at the man with the microphone. Go for it.
Can you tell me how influential you think the Christian Zionists really are on American foreign policy, given America's reliance on oil and their necessary alliance, if you like, with the Saudi regime and other oil-producing regimes? I mean, are they really going to sacrifice that relationship, which is so vital for their economy, in order to pursue policies that may alienate those Arab nations in support of Israel?
It's a good question. There are three or four key factors in the Middle East. One is the oil and the power of the oil companies and their influence over our politicians. The weapons industry is a second very influential power broker in the Middle East. The third is the Jewish lobby, the Zionist lobby itself. And the fourth, I believe, is the Christian Zionist lobby. For me, the influence the Christian Zionists have is largely over U.S. politicians who, when they get elected, do as they're told. So AIPAC, for example, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, supplies daily briefings to every U.S. politician. They have staff in virtually every one of those offices. The team of people who work alongside every senator and congressman. AIPAC has its fingers in every one of those offices, providing daily briefings. And many U.S. politicians simply use AIPAC's press releases for the basis for their own statements. So behind the scenes, the men in the shadows, if you like, are probably the oil men and the weapons industry guys and the power brokers. But the politicians themselves do what the electorate tell them, and if they don't, they don't get re-elected.
Thank you for some very worrying facts that you've given us. I want to ask you, what do these Zionists feel about the Christians in Palestine? And I want to ask you as well, what is God doing in Jerusalem among the Christians there?
The first question was about what do the Zionists think about the Christians in Palestine. Well, you have to ask them. Those that I've talked to feign sympathy and compassion, and you'll find Christian Zionist organizations active in providing humanitarian work, if you like, the micro-reconciliation work among Palestinians. So you find Christian Zionist organizations working in Bethlehem, for example, employing Palestinians to work for Christian Zionist organizations. But when it comes to the real change, the issues of justice and politics, they're implacably on Israel's side. So they want to appear even-handed, but they're not. So Christian Zionists that I know who've dialogued with me on the plight of the Palestinians suggest that the best thing they can do is recognize Israel is mandated by God and Zionism is his will and work with that. And sadly, you will find a proportion of the Palestinian community who've acquiesced and accept the Zionist agenda. When push comes to shove, they would suggest that the best thing the Palestinians can do is recognize Israel's right to the occupied territories and find somewhere else to live. In terms of what God is doing, I'm much more reticent to be dogmatic about what God is doing, but certainly among organizations such as Sabil and other organizations in Jerusalem in particular, there is fantastic work going on a reconciliation level. Musalaha, for example, from Bethlehem Bible College, bringing Israeli and Palestinians together just to meet one another because they have segregated schools, segregated communities, segregated roads, segregated legal systems, segregated healthcare systems. So they never meet except as Israeli IDF troops against Palestinian kids. So there's an important work to be done bringing them together. But unless we deal with the structural issues, it's merely a panacea for the future.
Why hasn't Israel got the right to establish its own security in regards to Iran and the like? Because Iran, I would add, the West cannot regard Iranians as friends simply because Al-Qaeda, most of the units of Al-Qaeda are trained in Iran.
Okay. Good question. Israel has a right to exist within internationally recognized borders. Israel, as I understand, is the only country in the world that's failed to declare what its borders are. It wants the Palestinians to recognize the state of Israel, but unless you justify what your borders are, how can you recognize Israel? Israel has a right to exist under the rule of international law, which would mean a return to the 67 borders. I've visited Iran. I have many good Iranian friends as well as Israeli friends. And I don't believe that Iran is a threat to Israel. I believe that Israel, the present Israeli leadership, is a much greater threat to Iran than the other way around. And I fear that there will be a preemptive military strike against Iran, just as there was against Iraq in 82. So I don't see Iran as a threat to Israel. Some of the statements of Ahmadinejad have been unwise, foolish, just as some of Bush's statements have been unwise. I see remarkable similarities between the two gentlemen. But the Iranians that I know in Britain and in Iran are deeply committed to the rule of international law and a peaceful future in the Middle East with a secure right for Jews and Palestinians to live together as well as Iranians. The last time Iran went to war preemptively was 300 years ago. I don't know many countries in the world that have that kind of track record.
Hello? Oh, yeah. Before I put my question, I would just like to point out to this gentleman here that the Iranians are Shiites, Al-Qaeda are Sunnis. The two do not get on with each other. The country that has been the base for Al-Qaeda for years now has been Saudi Arabia, and the United States won't lift a finger against them. So let's set the record. But what I wanted to talk about is the indigenous Christian community in Palestine. Most of them, not all, but most of them, are either Catholics of Eastern or Latin Rite or Orthodox, not churches particularly beloved by the American fundamentalists who form the backbone of the Christian Zionist movement. Yet they've been there for hundreds of years, ever since St. Francis was given custody of the holy places back in the Middle Ages. Is it something to do with the fact that the Americans are so isolationist, they don't understand the world outside their own shores, that they've simply dismissed and written off these people as not really mattering?
That was a helpful but also a rhetorical question. I agree with much of what you're saying, but I would equally say there are many Americans who are waking up to what they have done in the Middle East in the same way that we did in the 19th century especially. Yes, you're right. I think half of all U.S. politicians don't even have a passport. They've never left America. When President George Bush was elected, the only country he'd visited was Mexico. So there's a lot of groundwork to be done. And yes, you're right. The dominant communities, Christian communities in the Middle East, are not recognized by many evangelicals in the West as genuine Christians. They're seen as nominal Christians or... And therefore, there are a lot of educational work needs to be done to help them see that. My fear is that Israel wants to push the Christians out so that it's seen as a straight war between the Muslims and the Jews. Because as long as there are Christian Palestinians there, that's a thorn in the side of their support that they need from the Christian West. Yes, yes, about 1%. But we have some here, which is fantastic.
Hello. Iran has said that it wants to wipe Israel off the map. That concerns me, yeah?
Yeah, it concerns me. The actual statement was that Ahmadinejad, not Iran, Ahmadinejad said he looked forward to the day when Zionism would cease to exist. There's a very big difference between wiping a people off the map and wishing for and working for a future where Zionism is a political reality. And I regard Zionism as an apartheid structure, as Jimmy Carter does, as many other leading politicians who recognize this, the inherent segregation. Do you know the separation wall in Hebrew is hafrada, which means separation. It means apartheid. That's what they're calling it. It's to segregate their land from the Palestinians. The reality is that Israel is driving the Palestinians into the desert. It's actually doing it. It's been doing it since 1948. So while we would lament provocative statements by people like Ahmadinejad, which have been misquoted in the Western press in translation, can be interpreted as demonizing the Jews, and we repudiate that. The reality is that the Israelis have been quietly doing it systematically for the last 40 or 50 years. So we want, that's why the rule of international law is so important, that we treat everyone the same and not have favorites.
Hi, I'd like to be cheeky and ask two questions, if I may. First of all, how influential do you think Christian Zionism is within the UK? Because most of what you've been describing seems to be in the US. And also, is Christian Zionism as an ideology in any way a response to militant Islam? Are there similarities and, yeah, and crossovers there?
Yeah. Answer the second one first. No, it's the other way around. Militant Islam is a reaction against militant Christian intervention in the Middle East. The roots of Christian Zionist theology go back, well, to the early church. You've seen the zealots. You know, the last thing that the apostles asked Jesus is going up to heaven, are you now going to restore the kingdom to Israel? Calvin says that there were more errors in that question than there were words. They were still looking forward to the kingdom getting rid of the Romans. So it goes back a long way, but as a movement, it's rooted in the 1809s, 1810s, 1820s, and the idea that God had a separate plan for the Jews from the church, which gave rise to dispensationalism. Now, yes, it's a dominant view in America, but I have to say that when I speak to Christian booksellers and book distributors, they say that these books are the ones that keep our Christian bookshops in Britain in profit. They'd go out of business if they didn't sell Derek Prince, Lance Lambert, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, John Hagee, Mike Evans, David Pawson, a good friend of mine, has written a book called Defending Christian Zionism, Answering Stephen Sizer and John Stott. He says that John Stott's commitment to opposing Zionism is lamentable and equivalent to Martin Luther's anti-Semitism. It's shocking. I debated him on Premier Radio recently, so I respect him, but I think he's very wrong on this. So it's not as influential in Britain. The difference is, in America it is explicit, in Britain it's implicit. You will find, I'm sure some of you, confession time, when I began my presentation, I suspect some of you were beginning to think, help, have I come to the right thing? Is he anti-Semitic? How can I get out of this arena without being seen? You might even have been embarrassed by the way I introduced my material. That's because in Britain, typically, churches are silent on this issue because the Zionists have been very successful at wielding two things, two sticks. Anti-Semitism, if you criticize Israel, you must be anti-Semitic, or you are justifying another Holocaust. So they use the fear of anti-Semitism or the tragedy of the Holocaust. Those two silence criticism. And it's time that we said we must repudiate racism. We must recognize our complicity in what happened in the Second World War. We must commit ourselves never to allow that to happen again. But we must speak out for the poor, the marginalized, and those who are being denied their basic human rights in Palestine.
This will be the last question, okay?
Two comments. I get the impression that you're ignoring the suffering of the Jews. My understanding is that the wall in Jerusalem was built to protect the Israelis against being blown up by the suicide bombers. And another comment, Sharon and predecessors who've participated in the process seem to have come to tragic deaths. And some people would say that's a sign
of God's judgment.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pat Robertson got into trouble when he suggested that. He was being offered a really large piece of land on the Sea of Galilee. He was going to turn it into a Christian Disneyland for tour groups. And when he suggested that Sharon's illness was a result of withdrawing the settlers from Gaza, God judged him. The Israeli government said, you're not going to get that bit of land now. You don't do that. You don't say that kind of thing. I think that's an appalling theology, but it's typical in Christian Zionist circles. I I would justify and defend Israel's right to exist within the pre-67 borders, which are the ones the British government, the European community, America, Russia, the whole world community recognizes, not the ones that they have illegally occupied since 1967. And if I didn't get on with you as a neighbor and I said I'm going to build a wall, that's my right. But if I build it on your land, that's not my right. It shows that the reason I'm building it is to steal the land from you. The wall goes through the suburbs of East Jerusalem, and it separates Arab community from Arab community. The route of the wall is designed in a maximalist approach to steal as much land as possible and to deny as many Arab Palestinians who live in Jerusalem the right to continue to live in Jerusalem and to have access to schools, healthcare, and to vote. So, for example, Bethany, which is on the south side of the Mount of Olives, is considered part of Jerusalem. It's on the wrong side of the wall now. The wall goes down the middle of the main road. So the road from Jericho to Jerusalem, there's not even a gate. They've cut the road in half. And the bulk of Bethany must now go to Bethlehem for their health care, for their schools, and their political administration. So the route of the wall has nothing to do with security. As I said, there are 200,000 West Bank Palestinians on the wrong side of the wall. Its route denies that. I think the best defense is a good neighbor. And if Israel withdrew its occupation, its settlements, it would find the international community, especially the Arab world, would be much more inclined to accept and recognize Israel's right to exist.
Okay. Let's thank Stephen. Okay. You've seen what a huge topic this is that Stephen's opened up for us this afternoon, so I'd encourage you to please come and hear him tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock in Shine, when he's going to be speaking on Christian.
It doesn't matter.
Zionism, Christian soldiers.
Just okay. Come anyway.
Remember, his books are on sale at the bookstore, and tomorrow after his talk, he'll actually be signing books in the bookstore. To learn more about this issue, also please remember that you can come to the Rediscovering Palestine stall in G-Force just over there. We have lots of information, reading lists, as well as opportunities for you to go and visit Israel-Palestine to witness the situation, to stand in solidarity with our Christian brothers and sisters.
Thank you. One last thing from me. The talk I've given you today, you can buy it from Greenbelt, but if you want to download the text of all of my talks, you can listen to audios, download those, and video. Type my name into Google, Stephen Sizer. You'll find lots of websites that say nasty things about me. Ignore those. And you can find my website, Sizers, with an S on the end, .org, and you can dialogue with me by email if you wish. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks again. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you.